I'm trying to kind of shorten this conversational style author's intro. And so not too long. It's been a long time since I did ALW podcast, it must be. But I'm going to shorten it as much as I can, because so that you can get to the book, which is the most interesting aspect of all of this. I had an experience with people today, despite the fact that I filed a complaint with the FBI's IC3, and it turned out that they gave me an insecure code, a code that is as meaningless as can be, because you can't really trace it. So I emailed them. I actually messaged them and told them that I have filed a report, which they didn't know. I don't know if they know or didn't know. But I messaged them, and the next time I made a button, the problem was gone. Which is quite important. But it's very important that the FBI gets to this problem. That's just the point. It's extremely important that they get to the problem so the terrorism task. Terrorism part is what I'm really scared of, because every time I try to log into my account, somebody's tracing my digital steps. It's almost as if someone is watching me not to find them out. The last statement was that there's a restriction on my account, and I thought, well, if there's a restriction, then there's something the IRS should know about, because there's no restriction until there's enough money so that you have to report it to the IRS, and then you're doubting the person who wants the money. That's what I think, and my buttons are still missing, as I said. So, the FBI needs to get to, basically, the FBI needs to get to the bottom of this. They need to know whether it's a restriction of theft. I say it's theft because mainly I have everything you can't. I have more than a lot of people. Yeah, I do. I have. Some people just need to have their name, their last name. They don't even need to have their social security number. Some people don't need that. They have everything. They have my social security number, they have my name, they have every detail, they have my EIN number registered with the IRS. They have everything they need. There's no restriction. For me, I mean, they say restriction which has to be lifted, which means that there's a problem. And there's a problem because there's something they have to report to the IRS. I suggest the FBI gets to the bottom of it, because I see theft. And which is reasonable on my part, that I should see theft and they should see a restriction, because the restriction doesn't make any sense. And I don't want to go too far in it, except that we have to feed this terrorism. In other words, I'm begging you to please support me through PayPal, because the more of this buttons that disappear, the most of these buttons that are come up insecure and fraudulent, the more we can trace this part, and the more I can make a record of this anomalies that shouldn't be happening, which makes it look even more like theft, because at this point it should have stopped. The restriction should have been lifted. But if not, then the FBI needs to lift it. And they can't do that. You cannot track someone who is a digital thief without being able to get a digital track. And coming from the outside, you can't do that unless there's something happening. So I'm begging you, if you read this, and I know if you're listening to this, and you listen to the book, and this is something you want to see, which is going to get bigger as we undo the complexities. There are 6 books here. So please, if you feel this is worthy, and as I said on my blog, if you feel there's something out there that's better, that's more humane, that's more scientifically true, don't. Take this as what it is, an excerpt. That's free. Right, just do that. Or otherwise, just give. Give two people. And swipe is an option now. But I don't want to stop mainly because if this is happening to me, it could be happening to all the people who do not have any capacity to be able to see these things, to notice these things. These patterns, these thefts, these frauds, this terrorism that is excused as restrictions. These things, these evil things have to end. I'm begging you to help me end it. Aside from that, I just want to tell you that this book that you're seeing as released is scheduled for next year, which I sometime by early next year, I hope, after Egan Paul. And then I want to work on ETA and other horror stories because I just can't wait to pen it. Not only am I asking you to, if you like it, support it, but if you like this and you support it, there is that, you know, book that is, to me, because I designed it. I know just how fantastic it is, and I really want to go into horror, science fiction horror, in a very, very unique way. And that's the main aim. That's why I'm a little eager about it. I want to do it. I want to do it in a very, very unique way. And it's important to me. If it's important to you and you think these things are important, please support it as well. Otherwise, thank you for listening to this. Thank you for supporting me if you do. And I appreciate you more than I can say. And I'm willing to give as much as I can because I really don't hold on to anything. And I don't have luxuries that are unreasonable. Thank you so much.
This book is a work of fiction, based on fictitious characters, incidents, and places from the author's imagination. Any semblance it may have with actual events, people, or places is of mere coincidence. All rights, including the right to reproduce this book in any way, shape, or forms belong to the author. No reproduction in whatever form or manner can occur without the prior consent of the author. Copyright 2020 Edulogics. Cross Disposition. Indisposition Act 2. They. Quest. For. They. Dater. There are deep variations of pain, subtle and wretched, like some narrow-minded recast of a dream, forlorn and lost, following a beaten path. There is mainly grief, like some four-way flashers glowing delight embedded in pitch darkness. Dr. Scott Dobblesley stared at me as if I was a fragment of some impossible dream. He was a pun, a first inducted into a pool of necessary associates de Trock had come up with. However bedeviled, his knowledge was coming in handy. The details of the newly enabled acquaintance with Dobblesley, however reluctant on his part, did not come cheap. Patrock would never have allowed the event, but like some necessary evil I was ill-equipped to adequately deal with without indulging, I was open to it, the most sinister of my transverse actions yet. Dobblesley, a prominent forensic pathologist, exhaled, opening the door to his home reluctantly. I thought this would never be personal. I shrugged as I passed through the open door. It's not, I replied. I mean, what else have you got to hide? When I got into his living room, I turned around and smiled. Do you ever wonder if they enjoy the intercourse? Tell me the secrets. You're the expert. Is there some post-mortem primrose path bemoaning of pleasures inaudible? He narrowed his eyes, his weakness evident in them, and as if wishing away the moment hopelessly, relaxed his facial muscles. I don't know. However, does that matter? I shrugged. I don't know. Why don't we ask a forensic examiner if only there was one nearby? He exhaled. It does matter if there was one around or not, does it not, Scott? I asked. He frowned. When did we get on a first name basis? I smiled, sarcastically. I'm sorry, would you rather I call you Dr. Dobblesley? He was silent as he retrieved the file he had placed on his living room table and handed it to me. I scanned the content for a few seconds, narrowed my eyes. I need copies of the toxicology reports. He raised his eyebrows. Why in hell would you need that? I was silenced briefly as I realized he knew little about me or my transverse dealings. He knew mainly what I needed from him. Whatever relationship I was to have with him will always be strained. And for the first time, however strange the sensations, the periodic information seemed more important than his comfort, the strangeness stemming from the events necessitating our acquaintance. However in hell does it matter why? I asked. He walked away from me and disappeared into a room I presumed was his study. When he came back into the living room, he handed me a separate file containing copies of the toxicology reports. Quiet and throbbing against the mellow neurotic ruins of a broken heart is a sacred scar, a sacred war, running backwards, unable to face time. The impulse could not be controlled however much it was ill-evident. There was a pattern that needed a pathological map of a deeply embedded transverse mystery. I spread the forensic reports out on the table in front of me and exhaled. The deeply curious and troubling case of the Bermuda Quadrangle. Dutroc commented. You don't say. I replied. They say anxiety murders defeat. It's like eating plastics and coming up for bread. Patrock spoke. Plastics, bread. I exhaled. There is something surficial and quite different from these manifest events without a current manifest. It's the reason you're here. If it's eating plastics and coming up for bread, what is it eating? What is it conditioned to eat? Caviar. Dutroc asked, smiling. Between bread, butter, or caviar, it wouldn't matter if it's conditioned to eat organically, I replied. A pathology of a digestive system then? Dutroc asked. A pathology of ingestion, digestion, excretion, all the works. Not neuropathy of any kind? Patrock asked. I shook my head. Things will be easy if that was so. It is hugely scalar while it affects CNS, PNs, glandular systems, the whole works. Patrock frowned. Are you calling them victims at the moment rather than classifying this under some death by unknown but natural consequences? I smiled, sarcastically. Natural? Consequence rather than causation? That's funny. Yes, I am calling them victims of some yet unknown unnatural manifest event. Patrock deepened his frown. Whatever are they eating that may be plastic, unnatural and a possible causation for gradual but fatal neurological paralysis? I held on to my sarcastic smile. This must be why I am the human transverse agent and you guys are huge and good for nothing. This must also be why you're alone, single, and never get any, Dutroc mocked. Freaking asshole, I cursed. Dutroc shrugged. To freak or not to freak? Whatever will nature do in times of extreme loneliness? Not freak, you freaking asshole, I cursed. Absolutely no doubt about it, Dutroc replied. Patrock changed the subject. Whatever is eating these freak humans or whatever you call them to their deaths? I was silenced briefly before realizing Patrock meant the statement in the form of a straightforward inquisition rather than a sarcastic one and exhaled, pushing aside all implications of emotional realities which could hinder my thoughts on the subject. It's more like 8, acute toxic encephalopathy, I announced. They both frowned. You're kidding. I raised my eyebrows as I stared from one to the other. At first it will seem these are random occurrences. But while the symptoms are not quite clear to these so-called freak humans, it is clear to me. It is clearly, whether gradual or sudden, 8. And what is triggering the sudden and unexpected death is the presence of something experimental and chaotic in Earth's atmosphere. I'm more concerned about the larger framework here, Patrok said. The build-up to the eventual event in this case. How are we sure this is even a force? Detrock gave a reply. Grown-ups are having childhood diseases, the worst thing a child could imagine, except it's a sudden reality for them. I nodded. It's what they had been progressing towards all their lives. And it's a force because it is a pull back from states to states, a later state to an earlier state with acute and terrible consequences. There was silence in the room for a few seconds. And the patterns are unrecognizable because adults are not supposed to have it, Patrok added. But they have it much worse according to the toxicology reports. By the time they die, every neuromodulator from serotonin to dopamine is nearly depleted. With serotonin gone, the major sense of well-being is out the door. If the disease doesn't kill them, they'll kill themselves, I added. And with dopamine gone, their cocaine will no longer work as it used to, Detrock commented. I nodded. Thanks for reminding me. There is nothing worse than the adult brain's effective cocaine supply suddenly becoming anticlimactic, nothing that is, except the collective symptoms of eight, which reads like some narcoleptic romance book of diseases. Disaster all around, Detrock commented. I nodded. Indeed. There is no escaping it. And the eventual yet unknown event? Patrok asked. Colossal, literally intertwined with catastrophe, I replied. We have to wait for it. There is an observation in natural reality within a natural phase space that nature acquires supernatural possibilities, which imposes that a subnormality cannot be imposed in the same phase space. Chance has no access. Its imposed symmetry a dimensionless disorientation of a disintegrating disillusioned subnormality. In the very realization of normalcy of being and humanity in the space-time reality on Earth, it becomes of universal necessity that the darkness of space must return to space a necessary cosmological functional framework. And if such super-reality of natural space were to suddenly become mechanical in phase space peripatetic maturation when nature may be forced to derive its origination, every possible phase variation of artificially derived manned human spaceflight is thrown into absolute chaos. The surge of air rushed the summit effortlessly and edged towards a slower expansion underneath, flattening the subversion. Its massiveness in the sky seemed negligible as its lift pierced the air strongly. The stillness moved, the movement stilled, and the quiet comfort enjoyed by the payload shifted efficiency at the height of technological progress. Flight 303 was in full swing. Dylan Dent had been a pilot for 10 years. Leonard France had been a co-pilot for 2. And all was well within the cockpit until the propeller hung, air trending motionless, disabling the thrust. The quick drawback of drag rattled the jet engines. Something was countering the lift energy. The downforce of the horizontal stabilizer gave. And so did the side force of the vertical stabilizer. The conditioning caved a semi-circular horizontal roll and then stilled, flattening the bend. Neither the nose nor the tail dived. The pull from the midpoint of the fuselage, the mid-center of the plane, was as strangely as it was deadly. It was an experience first dizzying and then emptying. Call it. Dylan barked the order at his co-pilot. As though in a daze, Dylan tuned out his co-pilot's call of distress and concentrated on the moment he knew was already lost. The sensation from the coming disaster was unlike anything he ever felt, anything he was ever taught or conditioned to expect. He felt weak and unwell, as if his presence on the plane was a twofold manifest. Both his presence in the airplane and his sense of genetic and organic presence was being pulled down. How could everything have gone so wrong? He wondered briefly if there was something yet missing in the knowledge of aviation which had allowed him to own his confidence for so long. Was there something that couldn't be missed he had overlooked? Controlling the plane was both intelligibly and unintelligibly impossible. They were prone for a free fall against both the vertical and horizontal mode, a pull against flight in flight. A free fall, it seemed to him in the flash of the moment, from some three-dimensional hell pulled with a string from a ninth spatial regression missing his basal dynamic dimension. Everything on board was suddenly in doubt as some acutely dislocated misalignment unpredictably formative from an incongruous transformation. The horizontal tug downward, although expected, surprised Dylan, the more experienced of the two. The evidence of the defect had to be in the horizontal tug without any angular decline which seemed propelled by a force stronger than gravity. And the unrecognizable free fall lasted merely seconds before the midpoint landing deadened all breathable weight, flattening the manned space flight craft like some deflated balloon unable to afford space. A strong-armed dramatis personae can hardly capture the legend of space acting against its own dramatization as the detachment of the presynaptic reality from its postsynaptic reality, offering up a dream. It's assuming active reality a waste yard conclave in peak dusts of perils, contrasting, never correlative and lost to all synaptic activity, the dancing becomes the synaptic activity, a presumption of some active potential too fast for its death, too happy for its end. The move was necessitated. With little privacy and a lot of transverse activities, the need for relocation took me out of New York to a comfortable house in small town Nebraska. What was unexpected was Nora's insistence on relocating with me. Tranquility when home, my best friend at my side to tell my strangest transverse secrets and mission exploits, and it was as good as life could get. The watch, clocks and socks store Nora owned was great to do some writing on transverse days off. And there, life was quite predictable, except for those moments like the moment I was in when transverse's surgically implanted tracer-generated arched electromagnetic impulses near the base of my ankle, arousing my nerve endings. It chimed against my skin once more and the triggers didn't travel further up or down. It was a summoning. I exhaled from the frustration of having had less time to rest after the last transverse journey than I had anticipated, retrieved the clem duds which I always kept with me, stretched my hands backward towards the base of my brain stem and injected it, ensuring the wide plus range cross jump cross transverse will be relatively easy, stood and turned to face Nora who was inspecting one of the smaller clocks by the front entrance. "Hey." She turned her attention away from the clock, hesitated briefly as she held my eyes, studying my expression. "Oh, you've got that look." I smiled. "Glad you recognize the look." "I don't have to tell." Nora shook her head, closing the distance between us. "You have to tell. You always have to tell. You may be gone for days at a time. You have to tell." "I don't know yet," I replied. She frowned. "I know you. You have an idea." I exhaled, held her eyes fully, studying her. "If I ever rushed a single thought, my head will be off its hinges dangling in traffic." Her frown deepened. "What does that mean really? Will it be enough at the moment to tell you I have been summoned to Transverse Central and whatever information I will be willing to share you are going to have to wait for?" I asked. Her silence implied consent. She followed as I made my way towards the back of the store, the heaviness of my absence already silently felt. "Your gossipy friends will keep you company when I'm gone. The beauty of small towns." She shrugged. "Gossip indeed, not talks." I smiled. "Well then, a woman shall not live by talk alone." We walked silently for a few seconds. Nora spoke. "Have you ever wondered what it'll be like with Patrock? He's cool. He's hot." I smiled and stopped walking briefly, to face Nora. She stopped as well, and faced me. "Are you asking me if I'm sleeping with Patrock?" I asked. She shrugged. "Well, you're gone all the time." I widened my eyes. "On missions. And not all the time. So you have never imagined being with him as a giant?" she asked. I shook my head, pondering on the detailed intent of Nora's questioning gaze. "Of course not. It is absolutely impossible. Now, if you accuse me of it in his human form. Like what happened at Halfway Creek. I nodded. Yes, like what happened at Halfway Creek. And a little more, she asked with a bedeviled smile. I shook my head, smiling, and walked. Yes. And a little more. Too much romance books, Nora. Too much free time since we left New York. Nora shrugged. You tell me they're hot in human form. And I couldn't help myself. I want to meet one. I stopped and faced her again, holding a grin. I may be able to bring you one of those transient ones, due to the special circumstances of our relationship. They're hottest as ever since we human females are meant to be susceptible, and those ones designated will last 3 days. You can make him your sex slave. Companion, she corrected. I smiled, raised an eyebrow teasingly. What? Whatever? Sex slave, companion, whatever. And you can do that, she asked, raising an eyebrow. I nodded. Yes, why not? But I'll need the agent's consent. So I must lie to Patrick. Susan drew her head back. You'll do that for me. I nodded. Of course I'll do that for you. You're my best friend. Nora squinted, almost disbelieving my statement. Whatever excuse will you give for that mission? I smiled. You're lost. You need to be found. That mission is definitely important to me. Nora smiled. And it may be the best mission of my life. And Nora left me alone to make my way towards the most effective open space relative to the house, the backyard. I stood on the dust bracket I had created in the back of the store. And in the open space, with a fully influencing good grip of the influence of the Clem Duds, I positioned my legs for the first phase transit 135 degrees deflection of the dust-to-dust leap, readying for the second phase transit 60 degrees deflection before anchoring in the ACO transverse transit central terminal. Stained with the plethora of lack and dispossessing significance, a brighter coherence displaces the sharper, taking over space like the flimsy rendering appetite of an epitaph after birth, a wonder, a flare, the lackadaisical candle fly, virulently detached from its wings. At Petal Clues, a transphase junction en route to transverse central, and seeming a phantom of my own imagination, I was redirected, not by my very own volition. It was a beckoning I could choose to ignore, and debated briefly, lounging in the open space of the interphase with lingering sensation like that of a celestial body inclined against the beguiling analysis of some non-participating overparticular unknown parametric body. I made the move in the direction of the beckoning. It was becoming my hardening instinct as an agent that every instinct had to be earned. The need to gather intelligence on transverse agents on the behalf of protecting Earth was inevitable and had to be covered. My emergence was anchored at the forested area enclosed in a grassy clearing, a space within space, a perfect but small gathering of dust bites set out for my entry. What the hell? I exclaimed, searching for the sighting of some intended object, subject as soon as I touched land. I faced Patrick instead. Tell me I have not just wasted my jump energy on some conversational interlude I could have with you anywhere but mid-transit? Do that before you tell me why this kind of crap should even be happening. Which one? I heard Detroit say, and turned towards the direction of his voice. Detroit held a devilish smile, as was usual. Whatever crap beckoned me from Petal Clues, I replied. I have no such power, Detroit answered, as I am by choice. I frowned. And here I would have suspected you, being the instinctual one. I studied the environment again, wondering why I was there, some echoic chamber immune to the very space it occupied. I felt levitated in transit, wondered how and why before turning to Patrick. What the hell is this about? And please tell me how you can beckon me mid-transit before you tell me why. He exhaled as I held his eyes fully. Since the occurrence at Halfway Creek, there has been consequences, one of which is the surge in your ability to transverse transphase potentials. That didn't come easy, especially after the dimensional surfacing of Dutroc. I exhaled. And the price? He hesitated briefly, holding my eyes intently, as if every breathing moment depended on what he was about to say. I am one. Dutroc is two. And you are four. I laughed, sarcastically. That about leaves 1-3-5 to shit, doesn't it? To dependability, yes, Dutroc replied. I chuckled. Do you mean to dispensable rather than indispensable odds? I mean dependable, not entirely independent, he maintained. I shrugged, maybe you mean disposable, not entirely non-functional, replied and turned to Patrock. Why am I arguing with him? You can't possibly invade my plane of propagation. You have neither natural nor human capacities. Patrock nodded. Invasion is impossible. It is rather against the propagation to modulate pulsation. I widened my eyes, a sarcastic smile escaping my lips. If it weren't so pathetic, it will be hilarious. 1 and 2 against 4? Your nodal instincts are basic and constant. You have neither principal nor propagation instincts. You two are so ridiculous right now, enclosed in this echoic chamber on Earth, beckoning me, trying to reason propagation inclinations with me. It feels like it's snowing on Earth and you've made the event a repercussion of some lunar existence. How can this ever be? Dutroc shrugged. What will be the point of this argument? I shook my head at his indifference. It will be you two as two lunar feral cats I adopted unknowing. It doesn't matter whether they are cats and dogs summoning me into this echoic chamber to determine what altitude a dog must turn into a cat to never survive the throwdown and what altitude a cat won't be able to land at all. If I want to put an end to this parallel pulsar propagation, I simply have to change the routing pattern of my pathways, don't I, Patrock? Patrock appeared to be in a struggle for understanding. Isn't it good that we know where you are in case something happens? I have been alone and helpless for too long to know. Natural reality is the very reason for my predicament. If something happens, it happens. There is no savior for me. Patrock studied me. If you block the northwest to southeast pathway, you'll be blocking Dutroc out, he said. Dutroc frowned. She won't dare. I shrugged, twisting my mouth. And which pathway do I have to block you out, Patrock? Go on, tell. Dutroc spoke. Stop it right now or... I drew my head back slightly. Or what? I will be dethroned as a transverse agent? Let me guess, so some human obsessed with artifactual perfection and self-sustained mythical narcissism can suddenly care about being a transverse agent? Dutroc held my eyes intently. Are you still an agent and willing to work, or you will rather resign all your duties at the moment? I held his eyes, wondering how much of his current reaction was feigned. So what? Someone else can solve the mystery. They were both silenced briefly. I continued. You two can't be running around in some echoic chamber against my natural plane of propagation so you can monitor my movements through pulsating frequencies. That's the very definition of stalking. Dutroc frowned. Stalking, what is that? I closed my eyes and opened it slowly, exhaling. We won't, Patrock declared. I opened my eyes slowly and turned to Dutroc. He narrowed his eyes. I'm sure I did not get the full definition as clearly as I should have. I raised my eyebrows. I won't, he obliged. I was silenced, briefly. Why am I pulled here right now rather than towards transverse central? They hesitated, Dutroc holding a mischievous smile. I hesitated, finding nothing remotely humorous. Patrock responded. The planes. I frowned. The planes? I told you you have no professional rights, no right whatsoever to invade my privacy. Patrock frowned. What? Privacy? De Trock mocked, laughing. What is that? I bet he's wondering, Deb. I bet I'm wondering how I can shut you up for good, I snapped. De Trock shook his head, smiling. For good? What a waste. Please shut me up for bad. Now that will work at the rate of rapidly dislocating fun. And we all know how you dislike those. I chuckled. Do you mean transmigrate, transient and easily disposed phantoms of lethargic male vectorization, or is it vaporization? We all know how I dislike that. Patrock shook his head. This brings me to the inadvertent side effect of the stalking charge against us, as you say it. However am I ever to find you if ever you go rogue or use the Clem Duds to jump a non-transverse operation? I smiled, and allowed my thoughts to linger briefly. I haven't thought about the going rogue thing. But that jumping non-transverse operations thing will certainly happen someday. Patrock frowned. Why? People have a way of abusing and maltreating people who mean well. Haven't you learned anything about humans? Sometimes a wrongdoing must precede another seeming wrongdoing. Which goes same for pulsar tracers, monkey dusting from one shit to the other shit like freaking gigantic assholes. De Trock laughed. Look at the non-typical agent abusing the irregular. I shrugged. Irrelevant of what I am, you're not monkey dusting after me, good for nothing shadow after shadow in every possible impossible corner, malingering some black hole, diseased with some dissolute Milky Way, chasing after some retrogressive, unhealthy, and vicious wormhole potential. It's worse than a travesty. No, you're not. Patrock frowned. Do you mean crime? De Trock smiled. By all means, she means worse than a crime. Call it maybe. But the explanation for redirecting your planar progression is because of the planes, a test you may call it, a prelude to our understanding of what may be happening and hopefully something to excite and incite your insight for what may be happening. And by planes here, I mean aircraft, those artificial things you humans fly with. I exhaled, a deepening understanding of their intent overcoming me at the moment despite the thoughts that I needed to place limitations on them invading my privacy. The downing of those artificial planes could almost make me think humans deserve it. They tend to lose their minds to artificial things, get carried away with nonsensical artifacts, never considering the eventual natural repercussion and how quickly nature can change every shit they believe in. I was suddenly aware of my surrounding. And it silenced me. 300 inches behind you, De Trock announced to quench my bewilderment. That will be 25 feet, I said, turned swiftly and rushed into the forested area. The next clearing I came to was of extreme and utter disaster, a symbolic tribute to abject catastrophe. It couldn't have been imaginable until I saw it, a plane crash that wasn't an accident or incident but rather an expression of some other force mightier. I suddenly understood why I had to be summoned, why I had to see it with my naked eyes. Accidents had a way of recording the pathology of their eventual fate, a step-by-step scientific undertaking of their very own undoing. This was neither scientific nor reasonable but a complete decimation of both. As a guided death zone, some certain instigation of death, the site was dead flat. What was once a space-contained airplane now looked like a flattened thread on the now leveled ground. Indeed, a thinly veiled, heavily grained, untrained planar super-existence, as a cast shadow cannot a shadow cast. Neither can it cast light. As some relay line on a runaway train undeviating with dead end turns, dead bolt resurrection can hardly be made without a turn. And at their best as spasmodic interscapular shifting devoid of a conscious estate, their dead time interphase intersperses flashes neither life nor quantum mystery. I paced, restlessly. It was apparent more than my insight was needed. At least we now know the big shit aftermath of the random neurological deadly events. On the one hand, there is the human thought monstrosity that they are progressing this degeneracy, moving forward. Then there is the seeming progression of such artifactual provenance. Pretty soon, there will be quantum computing and these aircrafts paralyzing down and non-elemental in the framework projected will be able to fly faster than the speed of fast and light. Dutroc laughed, out loudly. And a very gentle but yet glaring smile escaped Patroc. I stopped pacing and faced them both. Dutroc spoke. It will be unassuming to think the quantum computing thing isn't already here, already a part of the natural order of things. I shook my head, sarcastically. Don't be an idiot. It is mainly a part of the IoT, Internet of Things, and pretty soon it will change the world faster than fast and light. Patroc frowned. Does that statement have the scientific implication I think you are suggesting? I held a saddened sarcastic smile briefly, before I exhaled. You know a lot about space and the retainment of such in natural reality, I am sure. He nodded. Yes. Then you know anything able to retain space and retain itself in space must have in the least, a naturally enabled magnetic flux and everything it needs to do so. He nodded. Yes. And because you have such knowledge, you have a reasonable idea what the complex and simplex composite and actualization of such should be. Yes. I exhaled. Such, it is clear to me that slab of monstrosity out there has none of these. Patroc was silenced briefly. These scientists can't be this stupid. I closed my eyes slowly and opened it. Yes, they are. What a travesty, Dutroc bemused. I shook my head. Oh, don't be a kidder. It's more like a tragedy. All these expectation of height never so measurable at all. Dutroc nodded in agreement. Or ever truly project able in the world as anything but the hell between two artifacts, one going, the other leaving, both a purgatorial invention of some superfactual. I began to pace again. Between the quantum lack of teenability and the super freak monstrosity out there, I don't understand the need. It is already an artificial blob of machinery, nothing more. It had no heartbeat. Why flatline it? They both studied me and it soon became apparent they were doing so for a reason. My reaction to events often surprised them. As much as I was a transverse agent, I was a study case. Dutroc spoke. The trauma of witnessing something flattened beyond any opportunity of material recovery. You said it already. There was no heartbeat. Why would anything worthwhile be recoverable? I held his eyes. Why shouldn't something be recoverable? Because there is no natural life insurance for artificial things, he replied. These plane crashes happens. The only difference is that you have never seen any happen this way. I frowned, cautious about the inclination of their thoughts without the willingness to preempt it. Are we going to accuse nature of these acts? Dutroc answered. If there is no wrongdoing or self-annihilation in it, yes. I deepened my frown. What the hell does that mean? I heard Patroc exhale and turned to him. There are two things that happens when nature is used against itself truly and functionally, Patroc announced. 1, it will not work against itself. 2, it will not work against itself. I formed a bewildering, inescapable twist of my mouth. What the hell does that mean? You just used paralleled pulsating waves against me to get me here. Dutroc snickered. Ah. I stared from one to the other. What the freaking frack? Patroc spoke. It is indeed possible within all sacredly human and sanity probes that when by all laws of science and nature you realize you cannot possibly live in someone else's skin while you are someone else, to realize that there is no worthwhile identity, which isn't at the same time a phantom, indeed possible by all intelligent means, unless that is. All manner and means of viable intelligence is by measure of material itself phantom, there is a real reason for this in as much as it looks like it in the moment, it isn't unnatural. I was silenced briefly, thinking. This is not some genius or amateur tainting the parts and processing of aeronautic machinery. Patroc shook his head. I studied him. Not some terrorist act. He shook his head again. Not by manner, means and method, no. I hesitated. The 3M. So we're transferring all questionable aspects towards the intent. Don't tell me this has everything to do with Transverse Central. He hesitated. Not particularly, no. I drew my head backwards. What does that mean? TC doesn't know it all. Detroc frowned. Know it all? There is always a rat relative to Earth. I raised an eyebrow. A rat. Detroc engaged my eyes fully. That small animal always hiding in corners with two open ends. You have to find which corner is closed because there can only be one of those. You have to know where this specific closed corner is to know anything at all. And the only way to do that is to know where the two open ends are. The only way this is possible is to have the ability to be in two places at once. And this is more than merely humanly impossible. Indeed, you may say so that it is not particularly possible. I squinted, thinking. Those are some pretty incredible, not so particular possible impossible odds. There is the possibility that you find two open ends, which is roughly equivalent to 66.66%, the possibility of finding two endpoints of a triangle. This brings the possibility of finding the third closed end joined to the two open ends 33.3%, regardless of whether there is a rat there or not. There is never a 50% chance within all possible ends, there is just the 33.33 which cannot be rounded up. So it is always down. These are pretty terrible odds, you'll say. Detroc nodded. The possibility of being in two places at once is null unless you consider very major concepts of natural sciences. The possibility these two open ends lead to a rat is null as well unless there is preconception of the provable substantial relativity between the two open ends and the cornered rat. I nodded. So it's in the workings. It's what super-pseudo-fluid unthinking scientists do. They build a monstrous counterfeit complex, lose their degenerative minds to some artifactual and then begin to ask for some non-existent quantum reality shadow. What truly matters is the how. How do you get from this odd-versed not-so-particularity to some sort of deductive generalization or universality that can enable a natural process to flatline these artificial monstrosities? How do you navigate these events while they are unable to rat a corner for their existence and must be dropped like a pile of lackluster broken indefinite edges of no composite or retainable essence? What the rat in hell is going on? Detroc smiled in the same usual and mischievous manner. That's your job to find out. That's why you are an agent. I gained silence, absorbing the scope of the current burgeoning burden, wondering how any measure of fun could ever measure up or translate in close proximity to my responsibilities as a transverse agent. I am beginning to rethink my job as a transverse agent, I announced. Really? Detroc replied. You want to leave us in the lurch of the monstrosity implied. Well, whoever built the monstrosity should have foreseen the tragedy of the planar, I replied as a matter of the factual. Why must I do it when I feel maltreated and undermined? A smile graced the corner of his mouth. You're not going to cry, are you? I narrowed my eyes. Neither of you can cry for me. You can't even cry, can you? And here I am always confronted with burdens looming and ultimately human. What kind of progress can this ultimately be? This disintegrating markdown in plain sight, atomized without any quantum or biogenetic reality. This continuous upgrading of some subdual enlargement of some reduced mass of obsolete existence. I feel like I was stupid to have fallen for a dream state gone awry, transforming into a nightmarish dream date with notorious P.I.G. Detroc frowned. Who is the notorious P.I.G? I shrugged. You? They? Them? All notorious. He widened his smile. All P.I.G. I nodded. Indeed, but that is irrelevant of the fact that you have not provided much intelligence on this issue thus far. This is rather bigger than a mere earthly connection, isn't it? The main concept here is the rat relativity, isn't it? If the same concept was parametric within the fabric of whatever did the flattening that pretty much suggests. It's a transverse weaponry, Dutroux announced. Oh my dear universe! I exclaimed. Can't you keep things under lock and awe over there? Patrick spoke. Someone stole it and took it to Nidori. Someone? I asked. Dutroux spoke. Intelligence placed it in Nidori after it went missing. I narrowed my eyes. And this someone has it. Why didn't you just go get it back? That someone isn't quite an identifiable someone, Dutroux replied. I laughed, out loudly. You failed in the procurement of weaponry stolen from you. Nidori is a cloud planet, Patrick said. I shrugged. Cloud planets are engineered and maintained by Transworld. So what? Dutroux smiled. Nidori is a special kind of cloud planet. I raised my eyebrows, widening my eyes. And? Dutroux's smile grew devious. Nidori is a cloud planet engineered and maintained by defected transverse agents. I smiled, the moment seeming unbelievable, and stared from one to the other. I know my missions are know-it-as-you-go-it, but this one takes the cake. It's like gremlins running around out there on Earth, uncontrolled. What? Patrick asked. Fictional monsters, I answered. Tiny fictional monsters. Nidorians are not fictional, Patrick replied. I held his eyes. Of course not. They're transworld beings. Dutroux shook his head. You need to properly understand the fact that they're defected transverse agents. Which means they use all their resources to counter your intrusion, I added. They move the cloud planet from space to space, Patrick said. I smiled. I mean really? Now why would they do that? Dutroux smiled. Way to go. But you should ask the real question. I smiled, stared Dutroux's way briefly in agreement before turning to Patrick. Why don't you just destroy them? Now that's the one, Dutroux agreed. I shook my head, eyeing Dutroux. For a trigger-happy instinctual being like you, that's absolutely the resolve. But I'm sure intelligence may support this need. Patrick shook his head. It's never that easy. I frowned. Because they're transverse beings and not Earthians? I mean Earthians are easy to kill. Dutroux nodded. Indeed that is true. Patrick exhaled. That wouldn't be a reason. Whatever could be the ideal reason outside definitive intelligent lines? I asked. Patrick hesitated. While transverse may be hesitant on killing transverse beings because their deaths or rather annihilation is rather more complex than those of Earthians, if it has to be done for a foreseeable disruption against transverse or world progress, it will be done. I shrugged. And the ideal reason will be. Patrick hesitated, holding my eyes. They hadn't been linked to harm, Earthian or otherwise. Dutroux spoke. Until the possibility of now. What possibility of now? I asked. The weapon we suspect in this case is called the Dator, Patrick said. I frowned, yet unwilling to believe the moment. And this transverse weaponry is downing planes. Patrick hesitated briefly. We believe so, yes. We won't necessarily take responsibility for earthly problems unless we absolutely have to. Oh, that I believe. That I certainly believe, I said and turned to Dutroux, who I knew will give me the non-sympathetic detail about the weaponry. But we believe so, yes. Dutroux hesitated briefly. We're not sure about the events and their real causation, but we're sure about the method of the weaponry. So these are indeed suspicions which we are relying on you to confirm or refute. Talk about more burdens. I paced, briefly. that there is life in disaster is telling of disaster. Life cannot foresee its own means. One of such is the perception of time. The other is the exclusive spatial, complex makeup of genealogical and physio-anatomical congruence, for instance. These have tremendous effects, tremendous repercussions beyond artificial persuasions. And I really won't be here if you didn't feel there was a probability the weaponry used here belongs to transverse. Patrok nodded. Yes. I hesitated briefly. If we deregulate the artificial, induce the natural, maybe, we will be able to find something, so I am not wasting my time. Truly I don't give a rat's ass how you manage your time or whatever you call it. Detrock laughed. Fun, 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 he teased. I shook my head. That will be the farthest thing from my mind, as I am wondering what the debasement of the vertical looks like, as such is the case we have here. Patrok answered. That is some odd deduction considering the very nature of the events. I nodded. Indeed. It's insanity. But there is no second-hand designation for degenerate thieves. It's like attempting to teach a pauper how to be frugal, but a greedy pauper has no innate retainability for frugality nor does for poverty. It's crazy. He's nevertheless greedy, Patrok commented. Indeed, you got it, I confirmed. The greed is necessitated and being a pauper is not, especially with a trait like greed. What happens when you are forced to relieve a lie you told to achieve an artificial state, but this time nature is the engineer? You consider real limits independent of the artificial driving force of the artificial state, Patrok replied. I nodded. A seemingly obvious scientific solution, you will think, like some resultant wormhole alternation of Einstein's very black hole theories that were hell-bent to fail. Petroleum and other synthetic blend of fuels powers aircraft. They burrow for fuel and come up for air. It becomes feasible rather than impossible not to be able to imagine a necessary monstrosity or a naturally inclined disaster. Detrock was silent briefly, thinking. There is no reduced mass. I nodded. There is no material mass either. So force equals acceleration due to gravity, and all the strangeness and insanity becomes parametric. Phase time is also artificial. It neither loses time or mass. It has no time. It has no mass. Such, if a natural force is to blame, it first reduces the whole shitbang's artificial flight to what it is, an inanimate flight. That is, the whole system becomes that lacking perception, that of force, and this is quite strange because we should consider acceleration due to gravity from the engineering and physics perspective here. That explains the lack of angular relativity with respect to the disastrous event. The nothing falling, the zero gravity, is the very lack of perception of a force which, while not too far, is clearly distinguishable from the lack of perception of space. Force equals acceleration or force equals zero. Between zero gravity and no gravity, we must surmise that the differential truly matters. Detrock nodded. These events are farthest from zero gravity or free falling. It is the very force against everything propelling the artificial flight. It is rather counter-reactionary to the vertical implication of a gravitational pull. It is a parallel force which must induce its own flux, a parallel force against the artificial pull which makes it a thorough decimation of the vertical plane. I exhaled, glad for the company of Patrok against that of the more mischievous Detrock. Here we must incur space, as the pull against the vertical is spatial. The morphological planation is impossible, but it is almost perfectly made evident in the natural deconstruction. It is as natural as it is for a storm to uproot a tree, bring it down completely to observe a planar reality. Already estranged from the fourth dimensionality, it loses third dimensionality. And because there is no reduced mass to speak of, the only other alternative is some substantial reciprocal, but this too is as much a figment as there is no fractional body of matter. 1 × 1 = 1, and that makes neither constructive nor some total sense whatsoever against the horizontal, and if we induce the reciprocal, we must induce the rat in a corner concept, which brings us back to the very same deconstruction, a planar field without any particular distinction or spatial propensity to project. This also brings us this weaponry you say was stolen and what it does. Dutroux answered. It depends. I frowned. On what? The planetary environment, he replied. It imposes degeneration within a set horizon. I was silenced, trying to make sense of the information attained. What does that mean? Patrick explained. It traps an object within an assigned space and forces its degeneration. I held my stomach, a feeling of sickness overwhelming me in the moment, before I faced Patrick again. The exact type of weaponry that could bring down a cloud planet. Dutroux nodded. Indeed. You're catching up faster than I thought. My voice was still solemn when I spoke. Then Transverse did this. They remained silent. I spoke. By having defected agents who will use their resources not just to engineer an evasive planet, maintain it, but also to test a weapon they fear will be used to annihilate them on those they consider inferior beings. Dutroux smiled. Earthians. I ignored Dutroux's mocking remarks and continued. They are testing that weapon on us so they can counter your possible attack. A lab rat attack on lab rats, Dutroux mocked. A survival of the fitter than fittest. I exhaled as I held Dutroux's eyes. With neither the perspective nor perception of anyone fit here, should I even bother to ask who the fittest is? Dutroux shook his head. I had never been more eager to undergo a transverse mission, although I was now beginning to harbor a level of animosity towards the workings of transverse. I focused on the job at hand. Had there been significant countermeasures on the government's part? Nothing flies, Dutroux replied. Nothing? I asked. Dutroux raised his fingers to his mouth. Hush, they don't want people to know. I shook my head, disbelieving the intelligence, but knowing their easy movement amid construct boundaries meant they could get it. Dutroux smiled, sensing her doubts. The walls at the CIA and FAA are quite lean, contrary to popular beliefs. My frown deepened. Then they're not countermeasuring anything. It would paralyze everything. Airlines are means of life, of travel, of business, for too many people. They look powerless on that note. Maybe, just maybe, if they retreat for a few days, the Nidorians will leave. Dutroux shook his head slowly. I frowned. Don't they run out of humanity as transverse agents anymore? I asked, looking for a measure of hope. Dutroux shook his head. They have invested in and invented something that works. It comes as simply as the Clem Duds works for you. I hear it works a lot longer and better in keeping transients human. And even if they go away, can you risk them coming back and terrorizing again? I dropped my head, thinking. So there's no escaping this plight. If we can get them now, we should get them now. Indeed, Dutroux agreed. I needed the muscles of my forehead. Grounding every flight is a bad idea. It can't achieve anything, and in fact it's not doing anything. I feel completely helpless as an Earthian right now. Dutroux shook his head, smiling. I believe stupid was the word you were looking for. I nodded. Yeah, maybe stupid is the word. Dutroux nodded in agreement. But they're not as helpless as they are or look. They're planning an investigative flight. Putting all the experts they have, you know, those top of their field on one plane to prevent and find out what is going on. I hesitated, thinking, hoping. Maybe they'll figure it out. Maybe they'll find the rat in the corner or counter the effect of the data. Dutroux smiled. You really have that much faith in humanity? I have to, I replied. He laughed. I take back what I said earlier. Helpless and stupid is what does it. They both fit the bill, he lowered his head to hold my eyes intently, intensely. There are two things that can solve this problem, the remote controlling the data from an upper plane, and you, equipped with the counter weaponry we're going to give you, the Didini. I faced Patrok, expecting his much-needed input in the moment. Patrok held my eyes and spoke slowly and solemnly. If you do not get on that plane with the Didini, they'll all die. It's as simple as that, Datrok added. What you have to do is get on that plane. I shook my head, vigorously. How can I? It's reserved for their best. The best they know, Datrok replied. Indeed. No chance in hell, I replied. That's why we have the perfect prey, Datrok said. I raised an eyebrow. Prey. Datrok nodded. Subject if you will. A CIA agent named David Bentley. You must convince him to let you on that plane with the Didini. I exhaled, thinking about the possibility of failure with a non-transverse intelligent operative. And if he doesn't? They're all dead. I nodded in agreement. Indeed they all are. But I am not getting on that plane with some somewhat vulnerable but ignorant CIA agent and saying everything is okay. Datrok smiled. We ride free. I nodded. Indeed you do, but that does not guarantee intellectual insurance. It guarantees your capability to support my findings. And there are still too many mysteries to be solved on this case. If the instrument we suspect, the stolen data, is what was used to induce these events, there is something in the Earthian atmosphere that is making the data behave differently than it normally would. There should be a triangulated implication within a set horizon, that is, there should be the implication of two lines meeting strictly from perspective and perception. Two things I suspected was missing. Datrok spoke. There is an underlying causation within the Earthian premises that could be strictly dependent on Earthian atmospheric temperament. I nodded. There is more than something very wrong with the coordinating perplexity, aptitude, and gravitational complex. Ideologics. This book is a work of fiction, based on fictitious characters, incidents, and places from the author's imagination. Any semblance it may have with actual events, people, or places is of mere coincidence. All rights, including the right to reproduce this book in any way, shape, or forms, belong to the author. No reproduction in whatever form or manner can occur without the prior consent of the author. Copyright 2020 Ideologics.